Okay, so we are recording. My name is Zoe Vondran, and I am here with Landon Bridges. It is 10 a.m. on March 30th, 2021. Landon and I are in Indianapolis, but this interview is being held over Zoom. So, Landon, thank you so very much for taking your time to tell your experiences with us.
Of course. Glad to be on here.
Before we begin, I would like to briefly review the consent and deed of gift form that you signed, and explain our project a little bit. So the COVID-19 Oral History Project is a rapid response oral history focused on archiving the lived experience of the COVID-19 epidemic. This project was designed so that professional researchers and the public can create and upload their oral histories to our open source database. This study will help us collect narratives and understandings about COVID-19, as well as help us understand the impact of the pandemic over time. The recordings, demographic information, and the transcripts will be deposited in the Journal of the Plague Year, a COVID-19 archive, and the Indiana University Library System for researchers and the public. Do you have any questions so far?
Nope.
Okay.
Sounds all good.
Taking part of the study is voluntary, which means you may choose not to take part or leave the study at any time without any penalty to your current or future relations with IU, IUPUI, or the IUPUI Arts and Humanities Institute. Participating in this project means that your interview is being recorded and transcribed, and the recordings and transcriptions will be deposited to the Journal of the Plague Year and Indiana University Library System, and your name will not be confidential. Do you
Okay.
have any questions?
No.
Okay. So, in addition to signing the document, would you please offer a verbal confirmation that you understand and agree to these terms?
I understand and agree to these terms.
And I will also be asking you to verbally confirm that you agree to your interview being available under the following licenses, which I will read really quickly.
Okay.
So the first license will be under the domain of the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 4.0 International. Secondly, the COVID-19 Oral History Project, the Journal of the Plague Year, and the trustees at IU have the right to reproduce, use, exhibit, display, perform, broadcast, create derivative works from, and distribute the oral history materials in any manner or media existing now or developed later. You agree that the Oral History Project materials may be used by the Voices from the Waterway and IU for any purpose, including but not limited to marketing, advertising, and publicity. You agree that IU will have final editorial authority over the use of the COVID-19 oral history materials, and you waive your right to inspect or approve of any future use of the oral history. Lastly, you agree that the public has the right to use the materials under the terms of fair use. May I get a verbal confirmation?
Yeah, I consent to that.
And then lastly, I just wanted to ask for verbal confirmation that you have agreed to make your interview available to the public immediately after this interview.
Yep, that is fine with me.
Alrighty, cool. So here comes the fun part. So Landon, could you tell us just a little bit about yourself, where you're from, and what you're currently doing?
Okay. I'm originally from Indianapolis, Indiana. So I grew up here. I moved here when I was about 4 years old. But I spent, clearly most of my life here. I went to school at Manchester University from 2015 to 2019, studied athletic training. And now I am an athletic trainer with IU Health, working at George Washington High School here in Indy.
Okay, and so you said that you are working with George Washington High School. So how what do you do there as an athletic trainer?
So, as an athletic trainer, I am a healthcare professional, right? So, I'm a trained healthcare professional. I help assist athletes with emergency care, rehab, keeping them safe during sport, equipment, really anything that falls under that umbrella, I'm helping with. So, a kid comes in, he has a sprained ankle. Well, first I have to be able to treat the said sprained ankle, rehab it, clear them to participate again, that sort of thing.
In what ways has COVID-19 affected your job?
A lot. So, like I said, as an athletic trainer, I'm mainly working with sports, right? So when COVID first happened, when it finally kind of reached Indianapolis, I think the first like case of a student getting it was like Avon School District. And I remember talking to a couple kids at like track practice, and they're like, "Hey, we're gonna be next, man. We're gonna have be next." I'm like, "Bro, look, I'm telling my athletes this now. I'm like, there's no way IPS will close, because we're the largest school district. We have like kind of a high poverty rate in IPS. A lot of kids depend on food, shelter, Wi-Fi, whatever they need. It's usually at school." So I'm like, "Nah, man, we'll never, never cancel." And literally, as I'm saying that, a couple days later, they drop the bombshell that, hey, everything's getting shut down, everything's getting closed. So technically, I work for IU Health. So they just kind of pulled us back from the schools, and it was kind of a confusing time at first, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so you started talking about it, but what was your initial reactions to COVID-19, whether you thought about it in terms of your jobs or your personal life, health?
I didn't think it was going to affect us that much. Like, we've heard of like Ebola. We had the swine flu type epidemic, that type of deal. And it just didn't seem like it would be anything like that. It felt like something out of a movie where we're starting to get quarantined and we're starting to actually have to stay at home. And there was so much stuff we just didn't know. And I didn't think it was ever going to be that serious, or it was ever going to take as long to figure out as it has been. So, like I said, just kind of when it kind of got shut down, I was like, okay, well, we'll be back in school probably by the end of the month or whatever, and we'll go from there. And month went on, and we're still not back in the school. I'm not in my ordinary setting. We continue to have to like, there's new updates. There's more and more people getting it. Sporting events are getting canceled, and that's when it really started surprising me, is when sporting events started getting canceled. And yeah, it was kind of surreal.
Yeah, absolutely. And so have your thoughts changed since then?
Well, yeah, for sure. It was definitely way more serious than I think any of us were expecting. So I kind of touched on it earlier when we got sent away from the schools, a lot of the IU Health employees, if they weren't working directly in the hospital, we had to try to figure out something else we were going to do. They had something called a Resource Command Center, or RCC. And the RCC, what it did was it kind of reassigned people to different roles within the hospital wherever they needed help. So from the hospital side, it was complete, wasn't, I won't say chaos, but it was hectic, because now you have people being put in different situations where they need assistance. So for me, I was assigned to do two different things. I was assigned to do warehouse work at first, just kind of help sort the donations from the state and from the governor, and kind of like start packing pallets of which hospitals it needed to go to. Not gonna lie, that was awful. Don't recommend that, but it was a thing we had to do. And then shortly after that, I started helping out at a COVID testing center off of Georgetown. And I was there for a good 4 or 5 months.
So to clarify, the RCC, was that a response to COVID? That was a rapid response to a solution.
Yes. So it was more of a rapid solution to, hey, people, we need more help in different areas. And if say our like your department wasn't doing its normal job right now, you got kind of moved around to where you would be helping the hospital, be helping the healthcare system, but you'd also be keeping a job, keeping your money, that sort of thing. Also, I think it gave an opportunity to give like people who were kind of immunocompromised or older a different role in the hospitals. Well, like even when I was at the warehouse, there was a couple of nurses who were there. I thought that was kind of weird, but she was like, I have people in the house who are sick and elderly. I can't be around a lot of people with the during the COVID pandemic. So this was a good opportunity for her to still work and get her normal hours in, and get her normal pay in without being let go or furloughed or anything like that.
Yeah, so do you think it was effective, given how spontaneous it was implemented?
Surprisingly, yes. IU Health didn't actually have to furlough or let anyone go. Most of the time, they just kind of got reassigned or moved into different parts of the hospital. And I thought that was probably one of the best responses to it in the state, because you're seeing people being let go and furloughed. And I will say I was lucky enough and blessed enough to be like not have to be unemployed at any point during the pandemic. Didn't have to just sit and wonder if I'm ever going to get called back to my job. They just kind of did a good job of trying to not let anyone go and try to be able to pay people and that sort of thing. So I thought it was an appropriate response, and we were able to help out in the pandemic in a way that I probably wouldn't have thought I would be able to help.
Yeah, that's really no neat that you had that opportunity. And so you mentioned that over the summer you helped administer or you helped with the COVID-19 testing areas.
Yeah.
What was that like? What were your responsibilities?
So the very first time we were over there, like a lot of different, like surprisingly, it was I think neuroscience nurses and the ATs. So like the athletic trainers were involved in it, and the path lab people were involved in it. So at first, it went through like a lot of different changes, but at first there was three lines. You'd have to go in and you'd have to check in the people. So at first it was only open to IU Health employees. So you'd have to go check them in, make sure they had their badge, their confirmation, and you just kind of try to keep the lines even and send them to whichever lane. So at first we're doing like well over 200 tests a day, and it was just wild. And we're all outside, so we couldn't be inside. The building we were at, it was off of Georgetown. So IU Health has these two health pavilions over at Georgetown. So there's the one they actually use, and then there's this one closed down building. They just kind of made like their center of operations there for this test site. So you kind of go in, they had plenty of PPEs. People would drop off new PPEs. And by PPEs, I mean like, the preventative equipment, like the gowns, the gloves, the masks, the face shields, all of that. So you'd have that. You'd have people dropping off new tests. You'd have people picking up the tests while they're dropping them off. It went through a lot of different changes, but I just remember like the first time it looked like something out of a horror movie. Like we're okay. So we had these big old yellow gowns we had to wear first. We had to wear the yellow gowns. We had to double up our gloves. We had to wear a mask. We had to have a face shield. The thing had a hood on it, and I'm a large individual, so like I felt it was awful. It was tight. It was and like plus it was like cold and foggy in the morning, so it just looked like something out of a horror movie, and it was kind of funny, but like I said, it went through a couple of different changes, but that was kind of like my first experience with it. And then with what the athletic training role was, we just kind of started checking in people. We'd check in people, get their information. So it made it easier on the back end where people could just get their labels and you could start labeling the tests and go from there.
Right, so you weren't directly administering the COVID tests or anything.
Not right away. So that didn't come until later when we started getting like kind of permission to do it. A lot of the nurses started having to go back. And I also was like, I'd be perfectly fine doing this. Like I wasn't really that nervous about it. So yeah, towards I think the middle of April, maybe early May, that's when I started actually being involved in the testing.
Yeah, so did you think that the community, how did they respond? Were they, like when they were in the lines or something, were they easy? Did they sort of just comply with with the regulations that you guys had set?
Yeah, for the most part, almost to an annoying degree. Like, what I mean by that is sometimes it was like, okay, some people were very cautious, and they like cracked the, like they wouldn't open the window because let's keep all windows closed, but they would try to have a whole conversation and it just wouldn't work out that well. I was like, okay, just crack the window. Like, I have a face shield. I'm fine. I'm going to be okay. But for the most part, the community, it was a mixed bag. It was either they're perfectly fine with everything and they just kind of did whatever. They might complain about the nose swab, because I would complain about the nose swab. And, you know, whatever. And then sometimes you got people who were just straight up strange. Like, I had one guy in line. He drove up and he, first of all, like, if any normal human being does this, if you get a laser pointed at you, wouldn't you be kind of freaked out by that? Just a little bit. This man decided to pull up and he pointed something at us, and we didn't know what it was at first. It was a thermometer. So he was taking our temps to be like, well, if I have to make sure my temperature is okay, I have to make sure your guys' temperature is okay before you administer the test. It was a whole thing. I'm like, man, you're kind of weird. Like, why would you just point a laser at somebody that you don't know? That's strange. But I don't know. It's kind of a mixed bag when it came to the community. It was, you got a lot of people who are very kind of scared about the test, kind of scared about COVID. And then you just had people who were like, felt like they kind of couldn't care less, or like, oh, well, I have to get this, go back to work. And sorry, I feel like I'm going off on separate tangents. Let me slow down.
But no, this is perfectly fine.
Okay. But I felt like there's a lot of people, there's sometimes they'd come in and I was like, oh, well, I just need to go back to work. Right. And like, mm-hmm. I've had like 4 or 5 COVID tests. I'm still popping up positive. I haven't been able to work. And part of me, I would just feel bad for them. Like, that's kind of stressful. And these are people who are asymptomatic, don't have anything going wrong with them, and yet they're still testing positive. And we just don't know why. We had people who just needed to go back to school, and they're trying to just hurry up and get a COVID test done. People who are like trying to, I don't know, take a trip. So they're like, oh, I need to get COVID tested. And oh yeah, just a whole lot of different interactions, a lot of different reasons for getting tested, people who truly weren't feeling well. And then on top of that, you know, some kids have to be tested, children have to be tested, people with special needs need to be tested. So it was a whole, like, we touched on everyone in the community, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. And as the testing went on and as COVID went on, did you sense a difference in the way that the community had felt about COVID? Like, was there more fear in the beginning, or, you know, was there a shift in community sense of COVID-19?
Yeah, I think I could sense that. So I think at the beginning, there was definitely a lot more fear and just not less understanding of what was going on. Also at the very beginning, we're kind of dealing with just employees, so that was a little bit different. So when the employees kind of knew what to expect, but they also were getting tested for, hey, so they could go back to work, but also there's people like, well, I showed this symptom, I got sent here right away. So you have that fear of, no matter what symptom you're having, you're going to get tested. So it's kind of like that joke, like the beginning of the pandemic. It's like, can we just be regular sick? Is it always have to be COVID? Like that type of deal. Mm-hmm. There's people coming in. It was like, I had food poisoning and now I'm being tested. I have to get tested for COVID. So it was like that misinformation, that kind of frustration of like, I don't think I have COVID, but I have to get tested anyway, because we just don't know. We don't know enough about it. Towards the end of it, the end of like my tenure there, it was more of, it was way less busy. Probably, I told you at the beginning, we were doing maybe like 200 a day. It kind of dwindled down to maybe like 80 a day. He'd go in and people were a little bit more calm. I think more people knew what to expect when it came to the swabbing, and they weren't as like scared about it. People were trying to just go back to college, trying to go back to work. Hey, I have a cough or a sniff. I'm just kind of nervous about it. I want to get tested. So I think we helped put a lot of people at ease about that. So yeah, I think towards the end, anxiety kind of decreased a little bit, but people still saw the importance of getting tested and like just try their best to get tested if possible.
Yeah, definitely. So what ways do you think that COVID-19 has been affecting people's mental health and even their physical health?
I think mentally it's just kind of exhausting. You kind of get bombarded with it all the time, especially in the middle of the summer. You're getting bombarded with just, oh yeah, this is hey, the COVID numbers are here. And it felt like there's no end in sight, right? Like there's no talk of a cure yet. You thought it was going to be, a lot of people thought it was going to be done relatively soon, and the rates kept going up. People still have to wear masks everywhere. It was just, I think that's a, it's just nerve-wracking, right? And then you kind of have to stay in the house a lot of the time and can't really go anywhere. Can't really go, you like you can go on a walk, but people can't go see their families. People can't go see their friends. People can't gather in these big gatherings that they would like to. Maybe you take a trip every summer and that's like one of your biggest things that you look forward to. You don't have that vacation anymore. Or hey, maybe you'd like to take a trip over to grandma's and you can't. It's that's horrible. Like that's hard on people's mental health, you know? And I guess for people's physical health, I'm not sure. I think it could affect it. Like you're also just in the house all the time. You're not walking, you're not running, you're not doing a whole lot. You can't go to the gym, you can't do a lot of things. Plus, it's like, so you might put on weight, you might get kind of tired, start getting depressed, that type of deal. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've seen, terms like self-isolation, social distancing, and flattening the curve sort of emerge from this pandemic. And do you think that has an effect on people's mental health?
Yeah, I think a lot of people coin something called COVID fatigue, right? So people just constantly hearing, oh, well, make sure you stay 6 feet. You go to a grocery store and you hear the PA over and over again, like, hey, make sure you stay 6 feet. Everyone who's here has to be wearing a mask. Hey, there's plenty of hand sanitizer. And you turn on the TV, there's no escape from it. Hey, make sure to social distance. I think even once COVID has calmed down and there's not really, we're not in the pandemic anymore, I think that will still stick with people. The social distancing thing, the make sure you're wearing a mask, make sure you're, I think that will affect people because you never know, like, can you get that sick again and that sort of thing. I think that will definitely stick with people.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think that you mentioned a little bit about misinformation? Do you think that the media has been covering this COVID-19 pandemic well, and have you seen shifts in the way that they talk about it?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think even I was guilty of it at the beginning where they're like, oh, well, it's just kind of like a flu strain, it's whatever. And then it quickly wasn't just a flu strain. Like it was clearly people are getting affected by it in so many different ways. It's like, it's crazy. So you have people who have no symptoms, you have people who don't have a sense of taste or smell, chills, and you old, young, kind of dying of it. Like, I think over, what is it, 500,000 Americans have died from it? Something like that. So, you think of, like the media, like at first it was like, okay, well, you know, it's not that big of a deal, we're gonna be fine, to, oh, it's very much serious, we should probably be reporting on this, let's not spread misinformation. I think a lot of the misinformation though just come from people and just hearing rumors, and they'll just post whatever they'll say. So then you're battling media plus just general misinformation and maybe the social media sphere, or just in the public sphere, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And do you think that the local, state, or federal authorities have been responding to this crisis well?
Locally, I think Indianapolis and Indiana hasn't been horrible. We were pretty quick to have a stay-at-home order. Now, I could argue that a stay-at-home order could have probably lasted a little bit longer. We had a mask mandate. One of the states in the Midwest that have a mask mandate throughout the entire state. And like more recently, we're probably one of the fastest states to really roll out vaccines as quickly as we have. We're down to anyone over 30 can now get their vaccine. So we have done a lot of good thing, like a lot of good things, a lot of right things, right? But I think maybe from a county to county level, it really depends on where you're at. So like in Marion County, for example, where we wear masks all the time, right? You go in, you rarely see somebody just not wearing a mask. Now, if I literally go 10 minutes down the street, down to Johnson County, it's not the case all the time. People wear their masks improperly. People don't wear masks. Some restaurants don't social distance as well as they should. And they just don't enforce it as well as they should. Or if you get to more of the rural counties, so let's throw out a random one, like Wabash County, it's not very, no one wears masks. It just doesn't happen. I don't necessarily think they don't think like COVID's a hoax or anything. It's just like, it's not going to affect us. It's not going to, I haven't done this in a while. I've heard this line a few times from people. It's like, well, it hasn't affected me yet, so I'm not going to wear a mask, or I'm not going to do this, or I'm not going to social distance, or I'm going to go take that trip to Florida. It doesn't affect me. It doesn't bother me. So I'm going to do it. So I think it really just depends county to county, but I think state-wise we've done fine. Federally, I think it's been horrendous. Absolutely horrendous. There's been no national act on anything. There is no national mask mandate. They had the one stimulus, and then for 6 more months didn't get another one, and then probably like 4 months after that finally got another one. Meanwhile, there are businesses that are falling, even locally, of just failing. You have a lot of I think we ballooned up to some of the worst unemployment rates that we've seen since the Great Depression. And that's not an exaggeration. Like, that's just abysmal. And there is no real relief for that. There's a lot of people, a lot of families losing money, losing, not having enough food. It was just abysmal. it was just kind of tragic. A lot of people were had to be on unemployment. Some of the wait times to get unemployment, was like sometimes you had to wait on the phone for like 4 hours, maybe a little bit longer, just for them to process everything. So it was bad. I don't think federally, I don't think we handled it as well as we should have, especially when it comes to relief to families that definitely needed it, or people who definitely needed it. Like I said earlier, I was lucky enough to keep my job. A lot of people were not. And a lot of people had to suffer because of that. So I don't think we did a good enough job federally.
Yeah. And you don't have to comment on this, but I'm just curious. So we saw a change in presidency halfway through the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have opinions on how that has affected the way that the federal government has responded to COVID-19?
Not really. I think more or less it's, we got another stimulus, but I like how we're getting more vaccines out there, but I feel like that's more of a state thing. But no, I don't think it's been much of a change. A lot of damage has already been done, and a lot of stuff you probably can't redo. But honestly, as the pandemic's still going on, probably unemployment rates are still kind of up there. A lot of people could still probably need some sort of relief, especially a lot of these small businesses that probably lost like at least 4 months of revenue. Yeah, it's all bad. I'm not sure if it really made too much of a difference right now.
So do you think these conversations have sparked any kind of debate or different conversations amongst your friends and family or community members?
I don't think it's done anything crazy in terms of like my family. My family is like my mom's a healthcare worker, and they're kind of on the older side, so it wasn't necessarily a thing where they're concerned about. It wasn't like, oh, well, I just don't believe in it. It was like, no, they wear masks everywhere. They just, they order in when they can. I think my brother still orders in groceries. So no, nothing like crazy like that. I think for my friend group, I think we just didn't meet up a lot of the time during the pandemic. We'd have Zoom calls and stuff like that. Maybe play like on the PS4, but very, it was, I think a lot of us had that same thought process. Is like, okay, we're not trying to get anyone else sick. There's people with who are immunocompromised, can't really do that. Or if I did meet up with friends, it was mostly outdoors or maybe a small gathering, but nothing to the point where we're having a party of like 20 people in a cramped apartment or something like that. I think until there really hasn't been much debate, at least for me.
Do you think that the nature of Zoom calls or like online communication changed your relationships with your friends and family?
No, I think it just made it more accessible to talk to people. I will take that back. I think definitely my dad's side of the family decided to meet a lot more than we usually do. Like I've never talked to my dad's side of the family this much during like normal pandemic years, and then this year is like, hey, it's your birthday. Let's have a Zoom call. Hey, it's Christmas. Let's have a Zoom call. Hey, it's Thanksgiving. Hey, it's the third Saturday of the month. Let's have a Zoom call. It's been ridiculous. I've talked to my aunts from Georgia and my cousins from Georgia more times than I have in a while. Some of these people I haven't seen in years before the pandemic, and now we're talking like all the time. So I think more people are willing to reach out now and like see like, hey, these group Zooms are a thing, and let's do it. And I think for even like friendships, right? People had to get creative, like, hey, let's have a PowerPoint night, or just talk about really anything, or let's watch Hamilton. I forgot Hamilton dropped during the pandemic. Hamilton was played a lot during this. Oh, I'm not gonna lie. That
Well, that's a
stadium was
positive spin to the whole Zoom thing.
Yeah, I think that's gonna be like the one. Like there's some positives. Wasn't all bad. I like talking to people in person. I like being there in person. I'm a quality time kind of person. So like I like to go. Let's go hiking, or let's go play basketball, or hey, let's go out to eat because I like food, and go do that kind of thing. I like to sit around and talk. And sadly, we couldn't do a whole lot of that, but I was able to talk on Zoom. It wasn't the end of the world to talk to people on Zoom. Now, work meetings, Microsoft Teams, that we met way too much. I didn't like doing all that, but we meet every Wednesday for COVID update. We had to meet every Wednesday for COVID updates, updates at your school district or your school, because for IU Health, there's different school districts that we have athletic training through or sports medicine through. So we had to like get updates like, hey, are you in conversations with any of your athletes or anything like that? I was like, no, can't do that. I'm not. That was probably like the only thing that got kind of tedious was work meetings for sure.
Yeah. In those work meetings, did you get a sense that different school districts were being affected differently?
Yes. So, for example, I think down at Center Grove, they, you know, had the idea of like, hey, let's, I think Center Grove and Ben Davis are like, hey, we can do Google Hangouts and try to talk to our athletes if they needed to do rehab or if they had a serious injury. And so that was a positive thing that came from it. Like, that's a great thing to do. I wouldn't have thought about that right off the bat. Just be able to do that sort of thing over the phone or send rehab to kids. Also, as well, for like Ben Davis and for Ben Davis and IPS especially, they would have to drive through, hand off like food for like lunches and maybe dinners for some families. And that was a huge, thing. I tried to get involved with that, but there's enough volunteers for that, fortunately. So I don't think we really had that much in that kind of thing in Pendleton where they had to do that, or Center Grove. Center Grove's a little bit more well off, but I don't think that they really have to worry about something like that. But I do know, like, kind of in the inner city and maybe on like just in Indianapolis and period, we definitely had to have like let's give out the lunches and that kind of thing. Now for IPS, in terms of trying to communicate with our athletes, it typically didn't happen like that. So we did not, I know personally, I was not able to talk to a lot of my athletes. There's probably a couple kids I'm just thinking of right off the bat where I'm like, I wouldn't minded being able to talk to them, but I had no real way to communicate with them. Through Google Hangouts or anything like that, that just didn't happen. I think that's like the biggest difference, at least during the pandemic. Oh, I take that back. So towards the end, we're actually going back to the schools. I think the pandemic was handled differently from district to district, right? And you had different kinds of support. So for me, we had to, for all the ATs, we kind of had to figure out how we were going to do many things, right? So outside, are we going to have bottles, right? Are we going to have, because, you know, we can't share bottles. That used to be a thing. You could just definitely carry a six rack of bottles and have kids pick them up and that sort of thing. Are we going to be able to do that? The answer is no, we can't do that. We also have to check in kids, all the kids who are for any sport, any sort of the fall sports, what are we going to do? So what kind of questions are we going to have? They need to check in every day. So you have these QR codes posted everywhere. I think that's another random thing. QR codes are way more accessible now.
Yep.
But yeah, like it got posted everywhere. So kids had to come in. There was no one allowed in the building. You couldn't go in the locker room. So you kind of had to come already prepared and what you're going to wear for practice. You had to come around back. You had to scan the code. There's really no walking past me because I sat right at a table. I'm like, you need to come check in. And you'd have to walk butt through. You have to bring your own water bottle. There's no sharing towels, no sharing bottles. I have a big, like, kind of like a power flow type deal. So just this big thing of water that has like several different hoses. They could not. Oh, I had a coach stationed at that. So only people who are touching it would be me or a coach. So now we're not having a whole bunch of people touching the same thing. Mm-hmm. Right. Clothes were getting washed daily by our coaches. And that's just kind of how our COVID protocols were. You were able to social distance all up and down the sideline. Kids were encouraged to bring bottles during games, that sort of thing. Now, some schools, if you have a little bit more parent support, I love IPS, but at times there's not a lot of parent support. There's sometimes they get dropped off and they're not going to get picked up, or they're going to, the parents aren't going to show up to a game, or it's hard for me to get in contact with them to let them know that their child is hurt and maybe they need to go to a doctor. I have, those are just hurdles that I knew why I signed up for. Those are still hurdles I'm trying to get over. Like, that's just the culture of it. Now, if you go down to Center Grove, the parents down at Center Grove were very helpful to our athletic training staff. They built a big old power hose where basically none of the kids have to touch it, and it just continued to flow with water all the time, basically like an overgrown water fountain. Mm-hmm. Parents were very involved in the planning and very involved in, and also had the money to like do these certain things. Whereas I'm just like, no, man, I'm out here by myself. I kind of, my AD kind of like put me responsible for doing some of these things. So it was on me to like kind of come up with a plan and try to get something as safe as possible out so we could have a fall season, and it worked. So yeah, it definitely deferred from school to school, though, what you had to do.
Yeah, I imagine that economic disparity would certainly play a role in the way that COVID-19 was handled, just in the school system and with mm-hmm. your.
Yeah, honestly, I was surprised that we even had a sports season at all. We were entering the spring. I was not expecting to get this far. Right off the bat, I'm not sure if you've heard about this, North Central. So Washington Township, their athletic director had passed away of COVID in late March. And so their initial reaction was they canceled all fall sports. They weren't going to have them. IPS was this close to making that same call. I think someone else was about to make that same call. So for a while, I was like, we're just not going to have it. Or they're going to try to move it to the spring or do whatever. And we're just not going to have fall sports. Fortunately, we didn't have to do that. I did not have any positive COVID tests in the fall. No one showed up with symptoms. So I think that was very successful. But I was in general like pretty surprised on how we were going to have a fall season and actually had it work out. So
yeah, absolutely. That would be certainly a hurdle to jump over.
Yeah.
I want to pivot a little bit. So during the pandemic, we saw the Black Lives Matter protests in June. We saw mm-hmm. at the Capitol in January. And now we're watching the reactions to the shootings that happened in Atlanta this March. Mm-hmm. How have these protests affected your daily life?
I'm not completely sure. I think especially in the very beginning, it was very exhausting, especially with the George Floyd case, and you could not avoid it. Like, you could say, like, oh, I could turn off the TV, or you could go for a walk, but you don't go downtown. You couldn't avoid it. It was such a thing where it was just so ugly. And like, you just see the comments were even worse. If we try to go on social media at the time, it was gross. So I had a very hard time dealing with it, honestly. You know, then you get like the random text messages like, hey, you feeling okay with everything going on? And it's just, you could not avoid it. And it's like, it's not like I know the guy, but like, I clearly, like, it could be any of us, I guess. And it's just like, I felt really bad, honestly. It was exhausting. Mm-hmm. Now kind of reacting to like the stuff going on in Atlanta and to the raid on the Capitol, it felt after all of that happened, like this past summer, it was like this is kind of what they were protesting about. Like you see a whole bunch of people storm the Capitol, and like I think a police officer died from that. There was no complaints about, oh, well, police lives matter or anything like that. It wasn't, oh man, these are just a bunch of thugs, they like, there was nothing like that, but it just felt like every time that there's a black male who dies, they have to bring up his past, right? And they have to find a way to demonize them. And there was nothing like that. And then you see what's going on in Atlanta with now it's like Stop Asian Hate. And now you see Asians are getting killed for no reason. And it's just like, yeah, this is what we were protesting about a while ago. And it's more of less the same now. So it's a heavy subject that I try not to dwell on too much because it's exhausting.
Yeah, it's definitely exhausting, but it's part of the course of the pandemic. And I don't know if you think that COVID-19 has sort of made some of these increased some of these problems or amplified these problems of race.
I'm not sure, honestly. I think, I don't know. I think for some people, it's definitely maybe they've had more time to think about it, or I don't know. I'm not sure if COVID really made it worse, or was it always just this bad and we just didn't notice? Don't know. That's my best answer.
And so have conversations with coworkers or friends sort of stemmed from these issues?
Not really. I don't think I've talked too much about it to my coworkers, friends. Like I said, but it's a hard it's like subject, so I try to avoid it. But more or less, it's been mostly like support, and it's been mostly like, "Yo, this is not right. This is not okay. Here, if you need anything, sorry that this keeps happening." Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so you had COVID-19 back in November and December, and it wasn't related to you working with the COVID-19 centers.
Nah, it was. I don't exactly know where I got it. I don't know. But it was awful. Would not recommend. Luckily, I didn't have like any of like the coughing or the pneumonia associated with it, the shortness of breath. I just had the chills, I had the fever, the loss of taste or smell, the headaches, the body aches. I felt awful. Like, would not wish that upon anyone. If that's a flu, that's not a flu, man. That was awful. And it probably took me probably another week or two after I had it to fully recover because I was exhausted. Like that makes your body was fighting off a pretty serious infection, and now you have to rest. And I didn't really recover for like a month after that.
Yeah, were you fearful when you got it or?
No, because I'm young and I can't die. No, I'm joking. But I was more worried if I started getting like a cough. I would have been very kind of scared if I started getting a cough because then I have had to start taking my pulse ox, and if that drops, I have to go to the hospital. And if I go to the hospital and maybe have to be put on a vent, like that's scary. I was like, I don't want to be put on a vent. I don't want to see pictures of myself on the vent. Like that's scary. I didn't want that to happen. Like I said, fortunately, that never came down to that point. Some days I was worried that it would just get dramatically worse. I'm very grateful that it didn't. Yeah, I was a little scared, not gonna lie, a little scared.
Yeah. And did you, so I mean, social distancing clearly during that quarantining for sure during that time. Did that affect your relationships with your family or your friends because you weren't able to like interact with them?
Nah, I think it was fine. Like, I think I had, I had to miss Thanksgiving, clearly. I also had to, once I started getting better, like, people would be nice enough to, like, bring over food and leave outside. And if anyone wanted to come by, I have a screened-in patio. So I go out, I went outside to my patio, and people would be out, like, out of the car, and they'd talk to me from there. Like, as I'm starting to get better since I was still in quarantine. So they found ways to interact. I was grateful to have good friends to help me back, like, towards the back end of when I had COVID, but just kind of not in the middle of it. Like, that part wasn't fun. Like, oh, would not wish that on anybody.
Yeah. And so has COVID-19 affected, or do you know of other people who have had COVID-19, and how did they deal with it? You don't have to talk about specifics, keeping in mind HIPAA.
Yeah, for sure. My own brother-in-law had it. And then I definitely had a coach definitely talk to me about it. He got it in the middle of the summer, and he explains his reaction to it. He was really bad. He was put on a vent and kind of talked about, you know, what that felt like. You know, yeah, definitely. It didn't feel great. He was just thankful to be alive. My brother-in-law was, he was about this close to getting vented. He was on a BiPAP machine, so it wasn't like he's conscious, but he's, you know, getting the supplemental oxygen. I think for him, he might just take my opinion a little bit more seriously when I tell him to go to the hospital, but that's another story. But I'm glad he's okay. I can joke about that now, but my man is hard headed. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes it's hard to come to terms with the fact that we're not invincible.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, my partner also had COVID the same time I had COVID, and it affected her a little bit differently. She had a cough, but it never got too bad. She had the loss of taste and smell as well. Unfortunately for her, she really hasn't gotten all that back. She really can't smell all that well. And for her, everything tastes metallic. So that kind of sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't know that the effects could be so long lasting.
Yeah. There's some people who are, I think they call them long haulers, where they're just still recovering from the damage from COVID. Whether it was like the lung stuff, or, you know, some people have weird reactions where they have to kind of learn how to walk again. It's crazy to me. For me, I got my taste and smell back relatively quickly, which is kind of uncommon, because usually you have, I have everything, loss of taste and smell. It usually takes a couple months to get back. I got it back with probably like less than 2 weeks after I had it.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I was like, yes, awesome. I think, just a random tangent, I think losing your taste and smell is like one of the weirdest sensations, like, to have, right? Like, for me, like, dang, do I forget what things taste like? What does this taste like? I didn't, for a second, like, at the very beginning, I was like, well, it's either I have the flu or COVID. And I woke up one morning, and I was like, okay, let me just go lay on the couch. I went and grabbed me something to drink, and a little something to eat. I'm drinking the drink. I'm like, wait a minute. I take another sip of it. It's like, I can't taste it. I can't taste anything. It's over. I have COVID. Like, so yeah.
Yeah, I can't imagine not being able to taste anything and to satiate some of my cravings.
I was, the crazy thing is, I still had an appetite. Like, I still was hungry. So I tried to eat something. I'm like, what's the point of even eating? I can't taste it. I can't even enjoy it.
Yeah, that's awful.
Yeah, it was
So yeah, I just have a few more questions before we wrap up. But do you think that, or how does this pandemic sort of compare to other big events in your life? Like I'm thinking 9/11, swine flu, the Great Recession of 2008, any number of those events. Do you think this compares to that?
Shoot, I think maybe. You know, that's hard to say. All of those are like really life-changing things, like in general. I think but for me specifically, I think maybe the recession was like a very big event, right? Once again, fortunately, we all kept jobs and stuff like that, but you know, we couldn't go to a whole bunch of places, couldn't travel a whole lot of places because of, you know, gas prices were extremely high during that time. My mom was able to keep working, fortunately, but pretty soon after that recession started, the company that she really liked and loved to work for went under. And you know, she had to go somewhere else, and that affected a couple of different things. Yeah, I think that was probably the one that affected me like the most. Swine flu, like I was conscious for it. I didn't think it was that big of a deal. I remember having to do like the inhale vaccine thing. If you remember that, did you guys have to do that in like elementary school? Y'all didn't have to do that.
No.
What? Okay, yeah. Basically, for whatever reason, we had to do like the vaccine was nasal. So we went to school one day. We just got it done, and that was the end of that. Like I'm glad I got to share something you didn't know. Like yeah, that was a thing we had to do. 9/11, I was just too young. So like I understand like the repercussions of 9/11 kind of after the fact, but I do not consciously remember a whole lot of like that day. I think my mom yelled about it, but other than that, like that's the only thing I really remember.
Yeah.
So
And what can you imagine your life to be like in a year?
hopefully it's died down and I can start enjoying some of the things that I've really enjoyed doing prior to the pandemic. I think hopefully after all of this, like our infrastructure will be a little bit more prepared if this happens again. And chances are it may happen again, probably not in our lifetime, but it can definitely happen again. And I just kind of hope that our infrastructure is in place to where it works out a little bit better. That we've learned from our mistakes, that sort of thing. For me, me personally, I think probably a little bit more health conscious. You know, I'm not sure if I'm gonna still be wearing a mask, but definitely maybe distancing a little bit. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe definitely going out a little bit more often, and just kind of not taking the things that I took for granted, like going to a movie theater, or hey, let's go to this restaurant. It's a little busy, but I can wait. Like, you know, that type of deal. Or, you know, being able to go to a concert. I ain't been to enough concerts, and you know, and then right as soon as adulthood hits and I can save up for this, COVID ha happens. So it's been a, I think I'll just be more health conscious, being able to take care of my mental health, taking care of my physical health, and just being able to take time off and to enjoy those things I couldn't before, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I like to end the interview with the two questions. The first one, what have been the biggest challenges you've faced with this COVID-19 outbreak?
The biggest challenges. I guess at first, just not knowing if I was going to be able to keep my job or having to be furloughed or anything like that. And just kind of being creative and trying to make myself available so I could keep my job and try to work and all that sort of thing. I think some of the other challenges too, not being able to see my family as frequently as I'd like, not being able to see my friends as much as I'd like. Kind of feeling isolated, not being able to do a whole lot, trying to have to come up with, at least work-wise, come up with safeguards to try to help protect my athletes, protect my coaches, try to keep all that kind of in the right place and make sure everyone can get through it. Like, it was a, it's been a long haul. It has been, it's kind of crazy. Around this time last year, this would have been like the first time I went to test people at COVID, at the COVID site. And now I'm kind of like, this has been a full year, and you know, we've had a sports season since then. And I don't know, it's I think those have been some of the biggest challenges, especially just kind of being inside, isolated, not being able to talk to everyone I would want to, and trying to just put all these safeguards in place for work and things like that.
Right. And then the second part to that question, which is, what's the first thing, if you could do anything after, what's the first thing that you would do after COVID-19 is over?
I don't even know. I think I want to take a nice long road trip. That'd be fun. Being able to actually go see things without wearing a mask. I think that's like the biggest thing. Like, it's just being able to go places where I'm like, okay, I'm comfortable enough where I don't have to wear a mask around everyone. Yeah, I don't know. What about you though? Quick one.
You know, I don't know. I toggle between, you know, just going to a restaurant and eating without having to wear a mask, or just giving someone a hug without thinking I might kill them accidentally because germs.
Yeah, I know. It's like little things. I don't even think it's like a big thing. Like, oh man, like, I'm going to travel every country now. Like, I'm just like, in general, wouldn't mind just walking around without a mask. Think I'd be fine with that.
yeah absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time. Is there anything that we didn't talk about that you would want to talk about before we wrap up?
Nope, I think I touched on a lot of things, maybe some that could have been in more detail or less detail, but we're all good. It's all good.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure to hear about your experiences with COVID-19.
For sure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.